only of the wish. The mood that is actually present will receive the same treatment as the sensation which actually comes to the surface during sleep, which is either neglected or reinterpreted so as to signify a wish fulfillment. Disagreeable moods during sleep become a motive force of the dream by actuating energetic wishes which the dream must fulfill. The material to which they are attached is worked over until it finally becomes suitable for the expression of the fulfilled wish. The more intense and the more dominating the element of the disagreeable mood in the dream thought, the more surely will the wish impulses that have been most rigorously suppressed take advantage of the opportunity to secure representation, for they find that the difficult part of the work necessary in securing representation has already been accomplished in that the repugnance is already actually in existence, which they would otherwise have had to produce by their own effort. With this discussion, we again touch upon the problem of anxiety dreams, which we may regard as bounding the province of the dream activity. H. Secondary elaboration. We may at last proceed to an exposition of the fourth of the factors which take part in the formation of the dream. If we continue the examination of the dream content in the manner already outlined, that is, by testing striking occurrences as to their origin in the dream thoughts, we encounter elements which can be explained only by making an entirely new assumption. I have in mind cases where one shows astonishment, anger, or resistance in a dream, and that, too, against a party of the dream content itself. Most of these exercises of the critical faculty in dreams are not directed against the dream content, but prove to be portions of dream material which have been taken over and suitably made use of, as I have shown by fitting examples. Some things of this sort, however, cannot be disposed of in such a way. Their correlative cannot be found in the dream material. What, for instance, is meant by the criticism not infrequent in dreams? Well, it's only a dream. This is a genuine criticism of the dream, such as I might make if I were awake. Not at all infrequently, it is the forerunner to waking. Still oftener, it is preceded by a painful feeling, which subsides when the certainty of the dream state has been established. The thought, "But it's only a dream," occurring during the dream, has the same object which is meant to be conveyed on the stage through the mouth of the beautiful Helen von Offenbach. It wants to minimize what has just occurred and secure indulgence for what is to follow. Its purpose is to reassure and, so to speak, put to sleep a certain instance which at the given moment has every reason to be active and to forbid the continuation of the dream or the scene. It is pleasanter to go on sleeping and to tolerate the dream, because it's only a dream anyway. I imagine that the disparaging criticism, "But it's only a dream," enters into the dream at the moment when the censor, which has never been quite asleep, feels that it has been surprised by the already admitted dream. It is too late to suppress the dream, and the instance therefore carries with it that note of fear or of painful feeling which presents itself in the dream. It is an expression of the esprit d'escalier on the part of the psychic censor. In this example, we have faultless proof that not everything which the dream contains comes from the dream thoughts, but that a psychic function which cannot be differentiated from our waking thoughts may make contributions to the dream content. The question now is, does this occur only in altogether exceptional cases, or does the psychic instance which is usually active only as censor take a regular part in the formation of dreams? One must decide unhesitatingly for the latter view. It is indisputable that the censoring instance, whose influence we have so far recognized only in limitations and omissions in the dream content, is also responsible for interpolations and amplifications in this content. Often these interpolations are easily recognized. They are reported irresolutely, prefaced by an "as if." They are not in themselves particularly vivid, and are regularly inserted at points where they may serve to connect two portions of the dream content, or improve the sequence between two sections of the dream. They manifest less ability to stick in the memory than genuine products of the dream material. If the dream is subject to forgetting, they are the first to fall away, and I am strongly inclined to believe that our frequent complaint that we have dreamed so much, that we have forgotten most of this and have remembered only fragments of it, rests on the immediate falling away of just these cementing thoughts. In a complete analysis, these interpolations are often betrayed by the fact that no material is to be found for them in the dream thoughts. But after careful examination, I must designate this case as a rare one. Usually interpolated thoughts can be traced to an element in the dream thoughts, which, however, can claim a place in the dream neither on account of its own merit, nor on account of over-determination. The psychic function in dream formation, which we are now considering, aspires to the original creations only in the most extreme cases. Whenever possible, it makes use of anything available it can find in the dream material. The thing which distinguishes and reveals this part of the dream activity is its tendency. This function proceeds in a manner similar to that which the poet spitefully attributes to the philosopher, with its scraps and rags, it stops up the breaches in the structure of the dream. The result of its effort is that the dream loses the appearance of absurdity and incoherence and approaches the pattern of an intelligible experience. But the effort is not always crowned with complete success. Thus, dreams occur which may seem faultlessly logical and correct upon superficial examination. They start from a possible situation, continue it by means of consistent changes, and end up, although this is very rare, with a not unnatural conclusion. These dreams have been subjected to the most thorough elaboration at the hands of a psychic function similar to our waking thought. They seem to have a meaning, but this meaning is very far removed from the real signification of the dream. If they are analyzed, one is convinced that the secondary elaboration has distorted the material very freely, and has preserved its proper relations as little as possible. These are the dreams which have, so to speak, already been interpreted before we subject them to waking interpretation. In other dreams, this purposeful elaboration has been successful only to a certain point. Up to this point, consistency seems to be dominant. Then the dream becomes nonsensical or confused, and perhaps finally it lifts itself for a second time in its course to an appearance of rationality. In still other dreams, the elaboration has failed completely. We find ourselves helpless in the presence of a senseless mass of fragmentary contents. I do not wish to deny to this fourth dream-moulding power, which will soon seem to us a familiar one, it is in reality the only one among the four dream-moulders with which we are familiar, I do not wish to deny this fourth factor the capability of creatively furnishing the dream with new contributions, but surely its influence, like that of the others, manifests itself preponderatingly in